This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
And thank you for joining us on Monday morning here on the Dis-Chem Medical Show 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Doctor. I'm Nicholas Ingle and I'm chatting with a doctor. Maybe a doctor of cool hats, Doc. There we go. Dr. Kerry Wilson, welcome to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. We're always excited to talk about occupational health.
It's something that absolutely fascinated me when I read the pack that I was sent through, because in my mind, if you sort of think health associated risks, I'm thinking about sort of 1880s, you know, massive factories, smoke pollution, maybe the 1930s and 40s, but surely not in the modern workplace, which is why I'm so interested to chat to you. So, Doc, can you give us a little bit of the motivation that started this investigation? What was behind the idea to do this investigation and to look into South African workplaces and the risks for cancer?
So the National Institute for Occupational Health, where I'm based, and the International Labour Organization have a basic premise, which is that your work should not make you sick. And decent work is an SDG goal. So And finally, the most important thing about occupational health is that work exposures can be changed. You know, we can't change our age or our sex, but we can change what we're exposed to. And cancer is increasing across the world, but particularly in developing countries. And it has a huge burden on our economy, our people, us as individuals.
Because go ahead.
No, go for it. No.
I think, you know, with regards to the burden, it's not only the physical burden, but again, with cancer, and I suppose I can say, unfortunately, with my experience with people who have had cancer, it's a very long-term amount of stress and anxiety and pressure and toll, not only on one's physical health of the patient, but of the family's mental health and their well-being, family. And it can really, really, you know, be very, very stressful. So absolutely fascinating to be able to talk to you about this.
Yes, great. I mean, and there's also a burden, families that can't afford services like hospice and there often ends up somebody has to leave school or work to take care of the person with cancer.
Yes. And sometimes even more than one family member because of it's around the clock care. Can you give us a little bit of background as to what was the idea behind the investigation and, you know, what was the starting point? And we'll work through sort of then to the findings and what's been done.
Okay. So identifying causes of cancer is very complicated for a number of reasons. One, we have a multi-step process in developing cancer. So it's often not just one exposure or even one type of exposure. And what's being shown more and more in research is that we finally established smoking causes lung cancer. But there are a number of other carcinogens that cause lung cancer. And what's really complicated is that they can work together and make your lung cancer will develop earlier than if you just smoked or you just had a work exposure. So they work together to sort of speed up or increase your risk of getting cancer. Secondly, cancer, and particularly if we're looking at lung cancer, can take 10 to 15 years, 50 years to develop after you were exposed. So you're asking people to remember exposures 50 years ago. You're asking people to remember every single little chemical they worked with or that they used in a hobby. It's hard to attribute cancer to specific exposures. So that's where epidemiological studies come in, where we take a group of people, and in this case, we took the whole South African population who passed away in those years for which we have the data, so we can start looking for patterns. And that's what one wants to do with surveillance.
And how do the patterns help with working with the group as opposed to trying to get individuals to remember what they were doing 20, 30 years ago? I mean, I'm trying to remember what I did yesterday on Sunday, so I can understand the difficulty around this.
Yes, so that's why at this level, we just take main occupation. Mm-hmm. And in large enough groups of people, we can start seeing if there are patterns in cause of death in particular. So we're not asking people at this stage to look at individual exposures, but we are looking to see is, are there occupation groups that have slightly higher increased odds of dying from cancer than other groups who we would expect to be similar to them? And then we can then go back to the lots of research that's been done internationally around individual exposures and chemicals, and we can say, well, yes, we would expect cancer in this group because they're exposed to wood dust, which is a known carcinogen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes, yes. Sure.
This is the thing we used to love about wood shop in high school, is the smell of the wood dust and the pine being chopped up. So that's a little bit worrying.
Absolutely.
Oh, yep. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and the reason we look at work groups is, yes, sure, you were exposed to some wood dust in school doing a bit, or, you know, somebody has a hobby renovating furniture on the weekends. It's different amount of exposure and consistency of exposure to somebody who's working with wood day out, 8 hours a day.
So I suppose the worry there would be for our woodwork teachers.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So my understanding then, just in a very simple term, is that rather than trying to unpack individuals and go through the challenge of the sort of the memory and the recall, is the looking at a group, and if there are higher levels in a group, then it warrants more investigation. So, Doc, we're going to go to a live read now and then to our ads. When we come back, I'd love your thoughts on that. Thank you so much.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you so much for joining us on this beautiful Monday morning here on 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm chatting with Dr. Kerry Wilson. And we are chatting about cancer in the workplace, and looking, just before we went to ad break, we were looking at sort of the idea of looking at groups as opposed to individuals to see if there are specific trends in specific groups. Let us have your questions for the doctor on our studio WhatsApp number, 061-895-1019. So, Doc, just before we went to ads, we touched on the concept of looking at groups. How effective has that been in terms of finding trends and, I suppose, the spikes in cancer and in specific types?
So looking at groups and following trends of increased numbers is how medical health surveillance is done across the world. I mean, we identified COVID through an unexpectedly large number of people with a respiratory disease, first in China and then in other countries. So it's epidemiological studies in groups is how we identify where we might be seeing something unexpected. And that then allows us to focus in more detail. But also, so we were talking about, we were saying we've used this South African mortality data to look for trends and patterns. Because this data is captured nationally, so we're looking at the whole South African population. And because It's routinely done. So we don't have to take funds that the Department of Health does not have and collect data from individuals. And also, if you think back, when last did your GP ask what you do at work when they saw
Absolutely.
you for an illness? So
Yeah.
our practitioners also don't have much training in occupational health to look into the possibilities. And then globally, occupational health is often overlooked as a risk factor in a number of diseases. So even in the UK and the US, they use mortality data for surveillance of occupational health.
Right. And I think in that sort of, particularly the UK as an example, I saw within South Africa, countries with large mining sectors, there's a lot of risk potential and exposure there to that. You're talking about getting sick at work. I think back to certain stories and events in the 80s and 90s with sick building syndrome, with the air conditioning units, and sort of where people were just getting worse and worse. And I think the general idea of the occupational health and looking at what's going on is absolutely phenomenal. It's something that I'm a little bit amazed by and awe, because I think just in terms of the data gathering, can you give us an idea of how sort of it works from the first step where, hang on a second, we're doing the research, there seems to be something a little bit out of the ordinary here. Looking at cancer in South Africa, we know that it's sort of the particularly esophageal cancer morbidity. What are the steps in that process?
So some of the early steps are staying up to date with international research, from countries that have more funds than us to be conducting surveillance.
I think, Doc, let's go back and sort of talk about where we're getting the research from, looking at some of the international markets and some of the things that we're exposed to. If we could pick up back there just to bring our listeners up to speed, and then we can continue the conversation.
Great. So we were talking about initially also how occupational health is often overlooked, even in developed countries. Not enough interest and money is spent on keeping track of occupational health, although we do have robust occupational health and safety acts, which requires employers to look after the health of their employees.
Yes. But just a, oh, sorry, Doc, can I
Sorry, no,
jump
go
in
for
here
it. Yes.
with perhaps a slightly difficult question? I suppose looking at the reality of the world, is there sometimes pushback from employers and companies in terms of doing or having this research done? Because if there are findings indicating that there's problems within the workplace, within the building, going back to sick building syndrome, having to pull out every bit of air conditioning, all the asbestos in your insulation and these things, there's a huge cost. Is that sometimes a pushback and a delay in getting what needs to be done to get employees and workers into the very, very best environment for their health possible?
Absolutely. There's a big pushback, because companies are there to make as much profit as possible, and occupational health can be seen to be eating into profit. But what has been demonstrated over and over again across the world is that investing in occupational health and investing in your employees actually shows dividends, because sick employees become less productive, they're less engaged, they'll move on quicker. So you actually will also have an impact on your budget if you don't spend the money fixing the air conditioning and removing asbestos. But this is also why there are occupational health and safety acts, is to mandate companies to spend the money to look after their employees. And this is why we have to have inspections to motivate companies to implement the act.
It's something. So from my side, with our gym, we run corporate wellness programs and on-site training and fitness and nutrition programs for the staff. And I remember reading a report that probably came out about the 2010s, that it's for every rand spent on wellness, there's a 14 rand ROI, just in terms of the productivity, the better health, the more energy, the more vitality, the better focus, less brain fog. So absolutely, you know, it's huge in terms of the return to allow your staff to be optimal.
Yes. And just in terms of wellness, obviously we're doing some research in that area as well. But, you know, wellness programs and training are great, but there's organizational levels, changes that might also need to be made. And we're pushing psychosocial risk assessments, which looks at the actual mental health and the actual stresses. Because, yes, nutrition is important, but it might not be as important as scheduling your work day for most efficiency and comfort. Yes.
It's so true. I mean, your nutrition is kind of irrelevant when you have to leave home at 4 a.m. and you can't cook for your children in order to be at work, where perhaps starting at 10 a.m. and being able to prepare the meals and then coming in a little bit later or mixing up the days. Absolutely.
Yes. And then obviously in terms of carcinogens, that's obviously quite strongly legislated. And it's all based on the initial premise that I was speaking about, which is that your work should not make you sick. Mm-hmm. You're doing work to live. And so everybody should be able to be working in a job that doesn't make them sick. True. Otherwise,
and it's such, yeah. Sorry, go
I was
ahead.
Just going to say, it's morally also reprehensible.
Absolutely morally reprehensible. It's, I suppose the idea is, if you wouldn't let your children work in your business, then there's a problem type of thing. So
absolutely.
I think, you know, we spend so much of our waking days at work in the office. If you take into account not just your time at work, but your travel to and from, it has to be an environment in terms of quality of life that we want to look to go to and to be at and to be part of. Within the South African market, are there specific cancers that are on the rise within workplaces, within groups that we should be looking at, the public should be aware of?
So we know which cancers are on the rise in the general population. The Cancer Registry releases an annual report giving us that information. It's a little bit limited, unfortunately, because in some of our rural areas, obviously, it's much harder to be diagnosed with cancer. So we don't have a complete picture. But obviously, our top cancers, our lung cancers, our esophageal cancers, breast cancer, cervical cancer, those are all on the rise. And so it's important to make sure that some of those increasing numbers aren't from workplace exposures.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because of the impact they have on the people in the country.
So what do we do in terms of not just specific companies, but regions in South Africa? So there's, I don't want to name any specific towns, maybe we can, but I don't know, particularly like the East Rand of Johannesburg or some of the small towns that are close to large refineries and smelters where, you know, just from my side, because I'm asthmatic, so I'm always interested in listening where there's higher asthma rates in these regions. But that obviously then has further correlation to potential cancer risk as well. So is it not just companies, it's also regions which are problematic?
Yes, except the regions you're talking about, the East Rand, some of the small towns that have smelters or polluters, it comes back to companies causing environmental pollution.
Okay.
So that's where obviously environmental health comes in and is also very important. And legislation around air quality. But also where individuals can take implement controls to manage their own health. So things like air purifiers in your houses, perhaps if you're in an area that has a lot of pollution. But what we don't want to do is we can't immediately remove all air pollution. But we can make sure that your work exposures aren't adding to the air pollution you're perhaps already living with.
Right.
And that's also where it's important for workers to follow their training, use their PPE where it's recommended. Mm-hmm. And we know it can be uncomfortable or hot, but it's important to work with your employer.
Yes. But if the employers are putting these in place, one does actually need to be following the advice and the recommendations.
Absolutely.
And the use of them, because there is a cost to that. And you yes. don't, I suppose we don't want to have the opportunity, and I don't want to try and make companies out to be, you know, the problem here or bad, but if stuff is not being used, the accountants will look at the bottom line and say, hold on a moment. So it is yes. the responsibility for both. What are you seeing in terms of the challenges for adoption? We talk about PPE and some of these other factors that you're seeing, you know, in terms of, okay, maybe people can't afford air purifiers, or they don't want to be closing the windows on hot days. What are some of the challenges that are being faced in terms of the advice that you're giving and recommendations that you're giving?
So there's a couple of challenges. Number one is awareness.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't even know that dust at work is bad for you, you're not necessarily going to wear the mask. You're also not going to ask your employer to buy you a mask. If your employer doesn't know, they haven't consulted with a company that's there to help them understand their risks and identify which risks are really high risks because of the amount of exposure. There are a number of carcinogens in the workplace, in our environment, but obviously how much exposure you have to them really does drive whether you'll develop cancer or not. So just because you may have a bit of wood dust in your workplace or silica dust, if the levels are very, very low, then your employer doesn't have to spend the money on control measures.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're higher, the employer needs to be aware. And so the employer needs to be working with hygienists, occupational hygienists, to assess these levels and be aware of what they do and don't have. And just another point is that mm-hmm. obviously PPE is seen as our last resort.
Mm-hmm.
So employers need to be spending money on changing some chemicals that they work with or building in engineering controls.
Right. So these are vital points. And Doc, when we come back from our ad break, I'd like to touch on sort of, you know, what resources are available. Where can employers go to get information? Where can employees go to get information? I'm thinking, you know, sort of in your industrial areas in the big cities where you have small shops, small fitter and turner shops, you know, small engineering works that may not have the resources to access this information or even to even think about it. Where can they go? What are the resources available? We'll be back with you right after these breaks. You are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. Been an absolutely fantastic show. I'm here chatting with Dr. Kerry Wilson, epidemiologist in epidemiology, and I love this, the surveillance section of the National Institute of Occupational Health. That's a very, very cool title, Doc. What are some of the resources available to employers and employees that they can do to keep themselves safe?
Okay, so just basic information, the internet. is often easily accessible to everybody. And we specifically, the International Labour Organization and the World Health Organization share information and high quality information. So, you know, we worry these days about AI and fake news. There is a lot of information aimed at employers and employees on the ILO and WHO websites.
Right.
Then the Health and Safety Executive and NIOSH in the US are two occupational health organizations that produce a lot of fact sheets, training. And then when you have more specific questions, the National Institute for Occupational Health, we provide an advisory service. You can phone or email or pop onto our website and send us through questions that you might have.
Phenomenal. Absolutely. And the, everything is basically there in terms of what they need. What are some of the steps then to follow? Would they have someone come out to the workshop, to the premises, and have a look and test and evaluate?
Obviously, that's the ideal.
Yes.
The AIAs, which are accredited inspection authorities, come to your workplace. They'll conduct a walkthrough assessment to identify your hazards. They can then conduct measurements to assess, actually, are you exceeding recommended levels for workers or are you not? But obviously, those services can be expensive. And employees know what they work with, and they know what things cause accidents. So a very good place to start is to get employees to themselves identify what they think are their own hazards.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if you see a trend with employees, if they know they're all getting sick, they're always coughing, you know, they're getting flu a couple of times a year, more than the norm, they can go online and look at some of the resources. What is their next step? If they're going to their employer, but they're not really getting the response that they feel is appropriate, what are the next steps there for them?
So there are two next steps, actually, that they can choose between. If they belong to a union, they can speak to their union. All the unions have occupational health divisions, even if they're smaller.
Right.
And unions can, collectively, then raise the issue with the employer. The other option is reporting directly to the Department of Labor, Employment and Labor, sorry. And you can report to your provincial Department of Labor, because they then responsible for the inspections and perhaps advice.
Okay, cool. Got it. Absolutely. You know, at least there is a level and an opportunity, and hopefully some amnesty as well for the employees to raise concerns about health and about well-being. And what is the evolution in terms of the understanding of the risks within the workplace, as we've seen sort of from the 80s to the 90s and through to now? How good are things getting?
So absolutely, there's been a lot of evolution. I mean, we're no longer seeing people dying in their 30s and 40s from sweeping chimneys and working in the mines. Our life expectancy has increased, and part of that is due to reducing exposures in the workplace, removing harmful chemicals where we can. Our work has also changed a lot. We're into the fourth revolution with a lot more service and desk-based jobs. So, you know, some of our main serious hazards and health problems have been controlled. But we're seeing new ones come up, and we were talking about wellness and mental health. And that's a growing area where workers are struggling.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, yes, they might not die in their 30s from mental health, but it still has a large impact on their lives, on their productivity, on the company's output.
It's not just about dying. It's about living a quality of life and being as optimal as possible. You know, so you can be your best version of you at home and at work as well.
Yes.
So, Dot, you made me think of something. We're just coming up to the next ad break, so I just want to be a little bit quick. But in the modern world, particularly post-COVID, we're seeing a lot of people now working from home, spending more time at home. So maybe you're at home for 72 hours in a row versus 8 hours, 8 hours, and so on. Are we seeing risks of people at home?
Absolutely. So when your company agrees to let you work remotely, the company actually needs to do a small risk assessment of your home workspace. And it's not always just, it's not always sort of serious things like chemicals, mold. It's also things like ergonomic chairs. And is your desk at the right height? Or are you sitting on your bed and going to get back problems? So unfortunately, and this is what's made some companies ask workers to return, is that they don't want to take those risks. Yet, as you were mentioning, there's also driving to work, even if you're working in office. There's also the time, if people live further from the workplace. So I think there's a way to get a balance to, and yes, unfortunately, the company does have to ensure that there aren't serious risks in your work at your home. But we also have to think about people that work in your home, like domestic workers. Yes. Now, you're an employer and you're actually responsible to make sure your home is safe.
And appropriate for them to be working in.
Yes.
Sure. Absolutely crazy. What I mean, it's crazy from a point of view to think that that's also a responsibility, where what we can be demanding at work for ourselves, we also need to be providing for people who are working for us, whether it's someone in the garden or someone in the house or someone in the kitchen or all of these things put together. Yeah, absolutely. Sure. What advice would you give? I think if we can break it down into two, for employers and employees in terms of keeping themselves safer, even if they are exposed, what can we be doing in our general life to optimize our health and to try and ward off risks? Because you don't want to. And, you know, I'm in my 50s. I've seen it with my dad's friends who are all in their 70s, 80s now, where some have passed that they were smokers 50 years ago. You know, they'd run Comrades marathons, but then their lungs had just gotten worse and worse, whether it was emphysema or lung cancer. And these are the risks that we carry. What can we do just to make sure that we're giving ourselves the best chance as an employer and as an employee?
So as employees, obviously trying to live a healthy lifestyle. And now that doesn't mean becoming a gym rat who only eats lettuce, but you know, reducing some of the worst lifestyle problems. Smoking is number one. And employers can also help, perhaps by offering a, you know, smoking cessation program at work, because people are coming to work every day. There's more accountability. Trying to stay fit and active. Again, more and more companies are offering perhaps a weekly exercise program. Because we're spending long hours at work, and so maybe your employees might be more motivated to use a workplace exercise program. You know, even something like yoga, not necessarily high impact, because you have people with back problems and injuries. Employers and employees need to be aware of what hazards they get in their workplace doing their job. As we said, the internet is a great resource these days for both to really be aware. And employers have to take the regulated responsibilities to providing safe workplaces. But where people are self-employed or work in the informal industry, that then falls onto them to look after their own health.
Absolutely. And so as your business grows and you become more successful, You got to start looking after other people. And I think, and I'm very grateful that you touched on the mental health aspect as well, because I think that is so important. I think continued stress, underlying stress, perhaps you could say undiagnosed stress, this is really something that, you know, can over time lead to cancer, disease, heart disease, stroke, all of these health challenges, and just rob us of our quality of life. I think, Doc, I'm going to rename you from the, you know, the National Institute of Occupational Health to Workplace Warriors, because I think just it's such an amazing thing. We have to work. We don't have a choice. We have to be able to put food on the table. We have to protect our families, and we have to, you know, I think, is it one every South African who's employed, I think, is responsible in one way or another for 8 people. In terms of education, food, clothing, or whatever it is. So it's a huge responsibility and an impact that we can make. We're always looking for ways to improve the world. Let's start with our workplace, whether that's our home or our corporate. So really, Doc, thank you for the wonderful work that you do, to you and your team, and thank you for the incredible information that you've provided for our listeners.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's been absolutely fantastic to have you on. We hope we'll be able to get you back on to chat further. I think there's so much more that we can go into with this.
Absolutely. And NIOH, one of our roles is to increase awareness and knowledge around occupational health.
Mm-hmm. And it's I've learned a great deal on this, not only just in our conversation, but just in the notes that our fantastic producer sent through. So a big thank you again to you, Dr. Kerry Wilson, epidemiologist in epidemiology and surveillance section. I love that, at the National Institute for Occupational Health. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to our listeners for joining us. Big thank you to Craig for keeping everything going, to Sina, our producer, for getting us these fantastic guests. You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'll chat with you next week.